Well, hello, everyone. Hello, I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to the Kay and Gus Show. We have a lot on tap for tonight. I think you're going to find it very exciting. Okay, everyone. Here I am. I'm Kay Thompson, and I said jump the gun a little bit, maybe because of the rain and maybe because we're now broadcasting from the Cove. A lot of people know where the Cove is, so that's where we are. A little rain out tonight, so therefore we are not in studio in Jersey City, but hi to everybody in the studio. We have a dynamite show scheduled for tonight, and before we get into it, I am going to say hello to Gus. He is probably listening in, I hope, maybe. But anyway, I want to talk about the African American Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey. They are going to be presenting at the 212 Humanitarian Awards Dinner, Passing the Torch. That's on September 15th. Next month, as a matter of fact, it's going to be at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, 1 Center Street in Newark. There's going to be registration and cocktail reception. That begins at 6 p.m., and the affair goes on from 6 until 9 p.m. Keynote speaker, everyone, the Honorable David N. Dinkins, former mayor of New York City. We all know Mayor Dinkins. And, of course, a lot of other people are going to be there, and people are calling. They are really calling. I'm telling you, lines are ringing, and people are writing in and all sorts of things. So we're going to be talking to the African-American Chamber of Commerce, as we have been doing, and we're going to be spending an evening. Gus should be there. Gus is going to be there. And, we're going to be seeing exactly what's going on with him on that day, and we expect him there, and he says, yes, he plans to attend. But he's going to be presented with a humanitarian award for his leadership, courage, and wisdom in executing strategies that strengthen African-American businesses and communities. And you know that he has been doing this for all of his life, starting, I think it started some time ago, when there was the airport strike, the Newark airport, and the reason why Gus had walked out on that runway, as you all probably have heard me say before, was because of the fact that they were building, Newark Airport people, they were building the tarmac. That means the ground portion of the tarmac for the planes to land. And they weren't using any other construction workers other than white. So he decided to walk out on the tarmac, plane stopped, and then people called him in, and then everything got integrated, and that started it. And that started Gus's fame or infamy in getting things done. And we're going to be giving out more about him later on in the program. But hi, Gus. This is about Gus's tribute, and we want to say thank you to the African American Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey for putting this on. Now, we have a lot of people who say hello to, by the way, I have to tell you about Ali Al Rahman, Dr. Ali Al Rahman, who is now teaching. By the way, he was head of the Guardians, the police, the black policeman who came on when we were doing a show called Police Report. Well, Ali has a fantastic book. I've read it. The name of the book, everyone, is We Learn by Trial. Now, because of the rain tonight and I couldn't get into the studio, I asked Ali if he would come in or, talk next week on next Wednesday. And next Wednesday is I think it's August 22nd. And that's the same day that Lloyd Strayhorn is going to be on studio. By the way, Lloyd said that, yes, he is definitely going to be with us next Wednesday. Okay? So thanks, Ollie, for this book. It is great. It is absolutely great. Understand that he used to belong to a gang, and he used to be a singer before he was with the police department, and they had gang affiliations. Wait until you read this book. It's really, really fascinating, and it moves along very quickly. And this is the life of Dr. Ali Al-Rahman, so we'll be talking to him next week. I'd like to say hello to David Levy, everybody. He's a little boy. Al Jackson from Antigua, hello. From Bermuda, we have talked to people that we have talked to that have called us about the show. That's Brianna and Gina and Dallas and Gabriel from Bermuda. Kai D'Souza from Belo Horizonte in Brazil. Rick Guest, Jazz Jam, down there in Florida. The Swiss Alps and people from Rio de Janeiro and a few other people. Right now, I want to say hello to Tatiana and Tiana Washington, the teens who have a fantastic new show. Hi, guys. Are you there? I can't hear them. Can't hear Tatiana and Ty. Tiana. Are you there? Anyway, we're going to be talking to Bill. Bill Payne is going to be calling in, and we're going to be talking about his Amistad legislation. He authored and introduced legislation called the Amistad legislation. And by the way, this is marking the 10th anniversary of the Amistad legislation that he authored and introduced while he was a member of the New Jersey State Legislature in 1998. It passed and became law in 2008. Now, interesting, because the law mandates that the Eurocentric history and social studies curriculum, which excludes or distorts the role of African Americans, which excludes and distorts the role of African Americans, be replaced with newly conceptualized curriculum, which truthfully infuses the contributions of African Americans into the core fabric of the story of America. As my statement indicates, so said Bill, says Bill, implementation has been dismal, and I am seeking to ratchet up interest and support for the laws for enactment. Now, as soon as we get him on the line also, we will be talking about what's going to be happening in order for us to know more about this important piece of legislation. I don't know how many of you know, but African-American history is now compulsory for teachers to teach in the state of New Jersey. Okay, it was not compulsory when I was teaching, in New Jersey. I was teaching in Newark, so I was actually at one of the Newark schools, and it was not compulsory. There was very little about African American history, and then of course when I started doing broadcasting, and I was interviewing Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Dr. Van Sertima, Dr. Gunther, and you name it. You name the names, that's when I started getting a lot of information that I didn't know about before. Let's see if we have Bill Payne on the line. Are you there? Tati and Tiana, are you there?
Hey, yes. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, doing a lot. Thank you for having
us. Not only are you sisters, but you sound alike at the same time sounding alike.
Stop being me.
Oh, please.
I'm so glad you guys are on, because I know you have a brand new radio show, and I've been hearing it, and you're absolutely wonderful. And tell us the name of the show.
Well, the name of our show is called NRG, New Radio Generation, and basically our show is about getting young people's voice out there and educating the youth as well, because a lot of the times people tend to, on big issues, don't look at us, but they don't realize these big decisions that are being made affect us as well. So it's really to give young people a voice.
And also, we also have in there when we have our main topics, we usually would do a main topic, and then after that we would discuss, celebrity updates, movie reviews, and actually, have a little social time in there.
Mix it up, make it a little fun and interesting.
Okay, now what I want you two to do tonight, I'm sorry I'm not in there, but there was a whole lot of rain here, and a few people couldn't get into the studio, neither could I or Lisa, and we are broadcasting from the Cove here. I want you two to co-host with me for the interview with Bill Payne, about his Amistad legislation. And I think this is completely appropriate because of the fact that I want to ask you two now, how old are you?
17.
Hello.
17.
One is 17. Who's that, Tati?
Both of us are 17.
Okay, you're both 17. All right. Now, how much information have you gotten regarding African-American history in your schools?
In our schools? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, surprisingly, this year I actually got a lot of information. Not as much as there should be, but more than usual.
No, I think honestly, to me, it feels like it's not enough.
That's what I think.
And it was like when Black History Month came around.
Oh,
it was just like no care at all. It's the usual, of course we were slaves and blah, blah, blah. The usual. And we did a little bit more in depth, I guess, but not, like I said before, not enough.
In other words, you really didn't get African-American history then. You got history, right?
Yes, we got the white man's
right.
History.
But now this is we don't want to really call this African American history. This is history, mm-hmm. And I make that mistake, when I introduce it anyway, and I know a lot about the legislation. But it's compulsory for the state of New Jersey. Now I don't know if it's compulsory for New York. You know, I'm not sure about that. I just don't know, and I'm quite sure somebody will call in, or maybe Bill will let us know. But finally, after a long period of time, we can now include our history with American history because we are Americans. For instance, you know, there's so many things. When you hear about our history, when somebody tells you about what about your own history, let me give you an example. When I was in college, I remember a professor, he was doing something with our class, and I forgot. He was asking people where they were from. And so it came to me, and I said, well, and before I talked, he said, but black people don't have a history. And I was struck by that. I said, what are you talking about? I don't have a history. What did I do? Come here by magic? And if I did, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So ever since then, and when I was in college, I said, well, this is absolutely absurd. So in all this time, you know, history, African-American history, was not included as a part of American history. So that's why, you know, when you were in school, is there anything specific that you remember about anything involving your history in the schools?
Well, what I specifically remember, of course, is learning about slavery and, you know, the triangle trade and how we, you know, got to come to America and how that, you know, how whites basically killed a lot of us and had raped our women and stuff during slavery and had us work in the fields. And it was just mostly about slavery, I recall, but nothing about, and a little bit, I guess, about Africa, I would say, and our life before we became slaves, I get to do like a small comparison. But really not much. Oh, and, you know, about the usual suspects like, you know, Harriet Tubman and Rosa Parks. I remember learning, and Martin Luther King. I remember learning about all the, you know, all of them. We didn't really talk about Malcolm X much. I kind of learned.
What about Nelson Mandela, John Hope Franklin, Jackie Robinson, Huey Newton, Fred Shuttlesworth, Martin Luther King, Colin Powell? And I can go on and on and on, you know, because I am a history teacher.
Yeah.
You know, I was.
Yeah. We learned about
it. And I'm very, very curious. For instance, I was listening to a show today, and I happened to see a person that I really respect who is one of the most prolific writers on African-American history, American history, and that's Bill Katz, as a matter of fact. I used to have him on the show a lot. But I also had on Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Dr. Van Sertimer, and so many other people. As a matter of fact, I'm one of the people who has one of the original Bibles, you know, that was talked about with Dr. Ben and with a few other people that's on, you know, some footage that I have. But right now I think Bill Payne is on there, Tati and Tayana. So let's be prepared to ask him some questions along with me. Okay, you guys?
Yes, we got you.
Okay. All right, Bill, are you there? Bill Payne, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good evening. Mm-hmm.
Good evening. Hello. Good evening. Now, what's going on with the Amistad legislation? I understand that you introduced the bill, you know, years ago. So what's the progress? Where are we with this right now?
Well, first of all, let me explain what Amistad curriculum is all about. We have, many of us have gone to school here in the United States of America, and those of us who were born in the North and gone to school in the North. We're taught the history of this country, but it was from a Eurocentric perspective. In other words, the roles and contributions of African Americans was very rarely taught. And in fact, it was if it was taught, it was distorted, or example being there were during the period of enslavement in this country, they referred to African Americans as pickaninnies and people like that. And whenever they talked about the development of this country, they start with the Revolutionary War and things like that, and saw how important the War of Independence was, the War for Independence was. But never, never, never would they teach, they meaning the teachers or the curriculum, would never reflect or teach us about the role that African Americans played, integral role that African Americans played in the development of this country from before the Revolutionary War. And I always use an example about the Revolutionary War, and I talk about the Battle of Bunker Hill because I think that's still being taught around. But they never talk about the fact that there were black soldiers in that war, and that at the Battle of Bunker Hill that there was a black soldier by the name of Peter Salem that, in fact, killed Major Pitcairn. So it's important that our history be interwoven. It should be seamlessly included into all periods of history of the United States of America. So that the African American youngsters, hello,
hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he heard.
We heard you, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what the legislation is all about. Girls, do you have any information? Do you have any questions to ask of Mr. Payne?
Yes, actually, I have a question. So I think this is a great idea, but at the same time, I think one of the reasons why we didn't really learn in depth about African-American history is because it's a lot of what we learn is very textbook, you know, sticking to the textbook and what's going to help us pass the test. And I think the essential problem is that these types of questions aren't on the test, so therefore it's not important enough for us to learn it. And
how is this
new legislation going to help us with our test if
yeah.
this is
yeah.
not required on our test?
Yeah, exactly.
What can be done about that, Bill?
Well, what can be done about that is simply this. For instance, now in the state of New Jersey, there are, I think, four areas that are tested. There's literary arts, there's math, science, and I've been trying to get social studies to be also one of the areas that teachers, that students are tested on. Those areas are, the students are taught to those areas because every school district is going to be measured on how the students achieve in those areas, as I say, science, math, literary arts, and not social studies. I was trying to get social studies to become one of those areas of learning that the state would test. And if that was the case, you can rest assured that students and would learn that because the school district wants to make sure that when they are evaluated, that those three areas students do well in. If we can have social studies and history become one of those areas that's tested, then you can rest assured they would find ways to teach this, what we're talking about. It can be done. It's not on the test now, so teachers don't bother teaching it. Students don't bother learning it because they don't feel that it's going to help them on those tests. I had a piece of legislation that included the requirement that social studies and history be one of the four areas of curriculum that would be tested by the state. And if that happened, you can rest assured that would happen. But I think it's important for all of us to know that what we're talking about here in Amistad is not black history. It's the history of the U.S., of the United States of America.
Right.
In New Jersey we have Black History Month, et cetera, and I think that's very, very important. But not only black students should learn that the traffic light, for instance, white and black students together must learn this. When we talk about black history, usually it's taught only in black school districts. So,
yeah,
right.
So what happens is that other students don't recognize that that blood plasma, for instance, which may have saved the lives of some of their grandparents when they were in the Second World War, was developed by a black doctor. And I think that when they learn this, then there's a certain amount of respect that comes about among the white students. And then there's a self-respect and self-esteem that African-American students then have, and they realize that we did that, it wasn't just Louis Pasteur, it wasn't just Einstein, but it was black doctors like Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, then those are my ancestors. And if they did that, so can I. And that's the important thing about it. And I have to make it clear that I do not want to relegate the teaching of black contributions to the Newarks and the Elizabeths and the Camdens and the black schools of the United States of America. It must
be centralized. There's no doubt about it.
Sure. And it's U.S. history. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Any other questions, you guys?
I want to say, why do you think that they really originally did not get in depth about, black history, because we do take great part, and they'll like admit, oh yeah, and we were wrong, and then they'll like continue on, like they'll skip over it, kind of in a sense, like not make it a big deal as it really was, you know.
Good question.
Yeah, let me tell you something. We have there's a commission. When I introduced this legislation back in 1998, and it was passed into law in 2002, there was a commission made up of people, historians and others, who could help to rewrite, to write the truthful history of the United States of America. And there's one man by the name of Dr. Colin Palmer, Princeton University, an African-American history teacher. And what he said, and he defined it as this, he said, what we need to have is the reconceptualization of U.S. history. In other words, break apart the lies, break it apart, put it back together again, infusing it so that the role that we played during the Revolutionary War would be there. For instance, I don't know whether the students today know that during the Revolutionary War, more than 5,000 blacks fought with the Minutemen, that more than 5,000 blacks fought with the British. Because the British said, if you people who are enslaved fight with us and we win, we will set you free. The Americans during the Revolutionary period didn't want blacks fighting, but then it realized that if they didn't use the African Americans fighting too, that the British right. So, but the thing about it that's still so disturbing to me is that when we get our history books, they're written from a Eurocentric perspective. In other words, they're written by people who are descendants from Europe, and they will always paint a positive picture of Nathan Hale, Patrick Henry, Paul Revere, how brave
and
they were, right? And all of those people are white. So we break it apart.
Okay, the thing that makes me angry too is if we go back and we talk about all the even present heroes, which would be closer to maybe what the girls would be related to. For instance, Stephen Biko, Nelson Mandela, John Hope Franklin, Quincy Jones,
Lena
Horne. You know, run the gamut. Miles Davis, Tito Puente, Bob Marley, Muta Baruka. You know, we can go on and on and on and on. Eartha Kitt, Hattie McDowell. You can go into film. You can go into song. You could go into everything. Medical stuff. I always forget who built the pyramids. In fact, the evolution of man itself. You know, you don't get that. You don't even deal with that. When children used to ask me when I was teaching sixth grade, well, where did man come from? You know, I would have to say, and I thought about that, I said, well, what do I tell these kids? You know, do I say that, well, you know, in the Garden of Eden and so forth and so on? That is a religious point of view.
The continent of Africa, you know, now we know history tells us that man came from the continent of Africa. East Africa.
Of course. But that part was not in there. I didn't hear about that until I really started doing a whole lot of research.
Right.
My own.
And African-American educators, and not only educators, but others, anybody who is a teacher, black or white, it should be offensive to teachers to have to teach lies when they know it's not the truth. It should be offensive to anyone who wants to teach the truth not to be able to teach that there were, during the time they studied about Louis Pasteur. He learned how to pasteurize milk, et cetera. Well, Dr. Drew, when you're teaching, and my thing is that when you're teaching about various segments of history, you want to talk about pasteurization, that was for milk. He pasteurized milk. But Dr. Drew was the one who was able to preserve blood plasma that saved people's lives. So when you're talking about those kinds of things, you have to talk about the role side by side sometimes that African-Americans played. What they've done is they've just taken it out, make a void of what blacks did during these great inventions. Explorers. Perry went to the South Pole or North Pole. Well, there was a black man by the name of Hinson with Perry when he got... Perry was sick, couldn't make it to the pole, and Mr. Hinson was the one who went to the pole. The black man was the first one. But when they wrote the story, they told a lie. They didn't tell that we were there first. And so this is what Amistad does, is teaches the truth, and both blacks and whites need to know our true whole. And I really believe that you see these kids walking around with their pants down around their waist and their behinds and whatnot. I think that the reason why is because in kindergarten, embedded in their minds is that you're inferior, that you're nothing. They teach, when I went to school, they taught a Little Black Sambo, and you guys probably never heard of it, but Little Black Sambo was a story of a black kid who lived in the jungle with his mother, Black Mambo, his father, Black Jumbo, etc. But at the same time, they taught about white families in a little book called Dick and Jane and Spot, which they showed the white family living on a beautiful tree-lined street and the black family living in a jungle. So starting in kindergarten, first grade, they begin to plant the seeds of inferiority. And so what I have said when I went to the legislature in 1998 is that never again...
When it's brainwashed.
Yeah, right, exactly. So if we begin teaching the truth from first grade on, then these young black girls and boys will have a sense of pride, say, yes, of course, we can do it too. We're not just picking these. We're not those folks. We're scientists. And here it is. We're more than what they say who we are. So that's what
let us. Okay, let the girls get in here again. Tatiana and Tati, you have any other questions? Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, like, as you said, from, like, kindergarten, we've been taught, you know, certain things. And there's this, like, certain mindset pretty much of blacks that we are taught. And
right.
Do you really think that this program or Amistad is gonna reverse like the thinking that was embedded in us? And how many people do you think will really be interested in learning this? Because many people are gonna be like, oh, why do I have to learn it? You know, they say that today with simple things such as math, you know, so what's really gonna get people interested in this, you know?
Well, you go to school, you're not necessarily interested in, I don't know what they teach in first grade, et cetera. You learn it because that's what the teachers are teaching it.
Right.
So if, in fact, part of the curriculum, the bona fide curriculum of school, the learning period of the war, then the Minutemen and things like that, then you would then, textbooks now are being developed that will, in fact, when you see the war, the Battle of Bunker Hill, and I always use that because everybody seems to know about that, when they write that story now, they will, in fact, say that the soldiers there included 100 black soldiers as well as others. Right now, when you study that period of time, you'd never get the idea that we were there, all right? So if it starts... Those of you who are in high school, maybe going into college, maybe there's nothing much that can be done about it except for special courses, etc. But if you start out now...
Let me get in here for a minute with Tatiana and Tiana.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, you probably never had courses that teach us about the evolution of man. If you listen to Dr. Yosef Ben Yekinen, he will tell you that Africans from Africa, born in Africa, have heard the stories of where man came from. Now, according to some of the European anthropologists, as a matter of fact, if somebody wants to give more credit to that, you know, just because he's white, what he did, he went into Tanzania, into a place called the Olduvai Gorge. He found this area. He was looking for the beginnings of man. He was looking for bones. And he found the bones of a woman. And I forget the name, but Dr. Ben knows it, and so would Dr. Clark, Rod Sederer, and all the people who are studying African-American, and I could go on about Dr. Jen Ledden Jeffries, et cetera, et cetera. But they found the oldest bones belong to a woman born in the Olduvai Gorge in West Africa, okay? So wouldn't you think that if you found the bones, the oldest of anybody in the entire world in West Africa, what do you think the woman had to look like? Okay, but they don't tell that in textbooks. I didn't learn that until I started watching Gil Noble on Like It Is. When he had Dr. Ben on his show, and Dr. Ben started talking about evolution, meaning the beginning of man.
Right.
Okay, and how man evolves. So you see, it's really a very, very important. And you know, one thing, this stuff is kept out of the textbooks on purpose. Let me tell you, I have taught and I know. And it's time now that they included it in history, period. And I think there should be a movement to this effect.
Yep.
So you guys, being young, you can be instrumental in, you know, telling people that we come from kings and queens. Have you seen the pictures of the pyramids?
Right.
Okay? I mean, these pyramids aren't big and tall. How do you think these things got built? I still haven't figured that out. The pyramids are so tall and so big. They had to be built some kind of way. How did this happen? They didn't have Range Rovers then or anything like that. But how did this happen?
If I may say something. When I introduced this legislation, I was told by people that, why, you know, you're starting in the middle of the book. You're starting with the U.S. history. You're starting about the role that African Americans or enslaved people played at the beginning of this country, and that's true. They said, well, that's the middle part of it. We came from Africa. Now, that's true. But the fact is that world history, you know, that's another thing. I have to go back and ask them and write the law to teach world history equally about the kings and queens and pyramids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what I did, I started with this country here back in the 1500s, that what happened when we came to these shores. Most of us came, though African Americans came in chains. Most of them did not come to the Northern Hemisphere. Most of people, enslaved people, they say anywhere from 12 million to 20 million, came mostly to the Caribbean and to South America. If you know, Brazil has the highest population of African Americans on this Western Hemisphere. That's where most of them went. But what I did, I said, well, I'm not going to be able to tackle the entire world history thing, but I can start here. If, in fact, we thought of Jamestown and places like that, what was going on then? It wasn't just white people down there. There were blacks down in Jamestown who were also artisans and things like that. We need to teach what it was in this country. We've been here. We, African Americans, have been here longer than any other immigrant group except for perhaps the British, the colonists, all right? So we've been here. When people tell me, well, there's Spanish heritage, and that's true, or the Holocaust, that's true also. But what Amistad does, it takes United States history from the beginning and brings it up forward here. The Holocaust happened in the late 1930s and the 40s, and I think that everybody should learn about the horrors of the Holocaust. Everyone should also learn about the horrors of enslavement, about the slave ships, etc. If you want to talk about Holocaust, you must also talk about the Middle Passage, when they brought African Americans, and we've seen the picture, Amistad. Why did I name this legislation Amistad? And that's what the name of it is. I named it after that cargo ship that was in Cuba carrying 53 enslaved black people from one part of Cuba to another part. That ship was overtaken, as we know, by the enslaved people, and it ended up in New England. So people say, well, your Amistad is about that ship. No, it's not. I use the name Amistad, which means friendship, but I use that as an example of the triumph of justice over injustice. In other words, it was unjust for these people, our people, to be kept in chains on the ship. They overcame that, so it was a triumph of justice over injustice. Amistad legislation is a triumph of truth over lies and falsehood. Amistad legislation is teaching the truth about what this nation is all about. And that's why I try so hard not to get people to say, well, it's the same as the Holocaust or it's the same as any other thing. It's not. We're talking about United States history, and we want to make sure that everybody knows that this country would not be what it is with had not been for the integral role that African Americans played. We were not pickaninnies and people like that, but we also were ship captains. I joke a lot of times about Christopher Columbus. He had a black pilot on his ship. I often say that if it wasn't for that black pilot, Christopher probably would have made a wrong turn and gone off the edge of the earth. But if that black pilot was the one who saved him, you know. But I think that we need to know the truth. Christopher Columbus did not discover America, but there's a national holiday for him. The truth, and any educator, true educator, should not be able to teach lies if they know they're lies. And so that's what it's all about. I think that we should not get away from the black history, et cetera, but
hey, Bill.
United States history is what we're talking about. The cell phone, let's bring it to the cell phone that every kid in the world, everybody has one, was developed basically by a black man here in New Jersey. I asked students, hold up your cell phone. Look at it.
Okay.
That came from the mind of a black man. And I say, when you have to stop for a traffic light, do not get angry. Be proud. Because Garrett Morgan, a black man like you, invented this traffic sign. So don't get angry about it. And so when they teach us these things, then our youngsters, our people, will be proud of our heritage and will be able to say
okay.
that we can do that too.
Right.
Okay, Bill. Also, girls, there was a black man who invented the Super Soaker. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. But
you know what a Super Soaker is?
The water gun, water pistol.
Yeah, my grandson has one. The Super Soaker.
That was a black man did that. Sure. Oh my God.
Yeah, engineer. Okay. But listen, Bill, thank you. And I know that you're very involved in this, and I'm glad that you're staying with it because it is so very, very important. And I know,
let me ask you, let me make sure. Everyone within the listening, I want every fraternity, every sorority, every organization, every church to contact their Department of Education in their city because it's the law of the state of New Jersey. I want them to approach the boards of education and say, we want you to implement the law of Amistad. It's on the books.
Exactly.
And if you don't do that, we're going to take you to court.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's, okay. I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. There's another call. I think we have another call. Listen, Bill, thank you very much. We have to come on again and continue talking about this because, you know, with me as a history minor, you know, I'm really very interested in being and pushing this as much as possible. And I would like to hear more. I would like to hear more and also know a little bit more about monitoring, you know, the progress of the Amistad legislation being taught in the public schools of New Jersey.
Absolutely.
Okay. And what about homeschooling? Thank you, Bill. Okay, what about homeschooling, though, before you go?
Oh.
Did you go?
No, I'm here. I understand about this.
But make it a short answer, okay, because we have other things, okay?
Well, homeschooling is one of the areas in which we need to look at and see whether or not it's more effective. I mean, just as the whole argument about charter schools, et cetera. There's a lot of
African-American parents now are schooling their children at home.
About 15% of
more than there has ever been, according to the numbers that I've been seeing.
Absolutely, sure. Yeah. But there's all kinds of ways that we need to have innovative ways of addressing this problem, and I think that we can address it by teaching from kindergarten pride in ourselves, and we can do it. And so that'll change. That'll bring about a sea change in the attitudes of young people. They will stay in school because they're being taught the truth, and they can. If our ancestors did it, so can we.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tatiana and Ty, are you still there?
Yes, we are.
Tatiana, and more to you. I think there's another caller. Okay, we have another call on the line, do we? Hello? I think we have another call on the line.
Hello? A new caller.
Yes, no caller? See, this is awkward. I'm here in the cove and you guys are there, and I don't know what's going on right now. But anyway, I can't hear you.
I think we lost the caller.
Okay, that caller will probably come back.
Okay, this is Alita.
Okay, we are going to be talking to Alita Thomas, right. Alita Thomas and Sandy Ravis because we're going to be talking about Legal Shield. Tati and Tatiana, look, Legal Shield is a, let me see, when people, you know, they want to hear about Legal Shield because, and we want to hear about Legal Shield because of the fact that this is an inexpensive way of getting attorneys. And Legal Shield is something that I've been involved with since 1984, I think it was. And what it does, anyway, Alita, hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Kay, how are you?
Good, fine, thank you. And Tati and Tatiana Washington are my co-hosts, and they're going to be asking some questions about this also. Aren't you girls?
Yeah, how are you?
So, Alita, what if you could tell us what Legal Shield is all about?
Legal Shield is a service. It allows people, ordinary people, to talk to an attorney on any matter and not worry about the high hourly cost. We all have legal issues. We don't necessarily call them legal issues, but we all have legal issues, or we also call life events. Things happen.
Yeah, always. And then what you do is you have access to attorneys always at your beck and call. And some of the things that, for instance, you may have to use an attorney for, what are they? Alita and Sandra?
Well, just look at things going on today. Our company receives over 2 million requests for legal information per year. People have questions about...
2 million?
2 million.
Wow.
2 million requests for information or legal advice. Real estate issues, look at the number of people who've gone into foreclosures and lost their homes. Consumer finance, some people have bill collectors after them. You have problems with warranties, contracts. Family law, we all have extended family. You have divorce, you're worried about child support issues, child custody issues. A biggie is wills. Most people don't have a will. And if you die without a will, your state, the state you live in will have a will for you, and they'll probably get most of your assets or whatever you have to leave anybody or somebody. And also traffic issues. People, unfortunately, do have traffic issues. A lot of people drive like teenagers. We help people with that. We provide access to attorneys.
Access.
Affordable access
and it's,
to attorney.
And it's very inexpensive, I might add. And I should say, too, that you can just everybody's going to need an attorney for advice on any matter.
Sooner or later,
yes. In fact, yeah, if you need a letter written on your behalf by an attorney, you know, you may need a phone call made on your behalf by an attorney. You may receive a speeding ticket. A lot of people, you know, have those traffic things going on. So you see some, you know, things like this. If you're buying and selling your house, your driver's license is suspended. So there's so many things that you will need an attorney for. And
that's
sometimes
right.
People try to solve it on their, you know, by themselves. And I was telling people before, Alita, and is Sandy on the phone with you also?
No.
Is Sandy was on the phone? Okay. I was telling people before that, you know, sure, I needed an attorney on three different times. And when I joined a long time ago, you know, I was only paying for, you know, to get an attorney. Was $9.95 a month, and that allowed me to get all kinds of attorneys for anything. For instance, if I wanted to have, you know, my children's books copywritten, they would do it for me. In other words, if I'm doing any copies or anything that needs, you know, legal stuff, all I have to do is call that attorney. And now I'm not paying $9.95. I upgraded it to $26.
That's
I think
right.
That's pretty cheap. Still inexpensive for an attorney.
Right.
Okay,
right.
We also have another call. Tati and Ty, stay right where you are, okay?
We're here.
Hello, you're here. I think we have another call. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, we have another call.
Can you hear
me? Okay. Yes,
hi,
I can.
Hi, it's Sandy.
Hi, Sandy.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah,
good.
I just called in on another line. Yeah, I was just listening.
You're
to
on
you
the air
me.
Right now, so you're going to be talking about, you want to tell people what else? Oh, listen, you were on a couple weeks ago, and I understand that you had gotten some calls from where? Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. I got some calls from California for a person that was interested in the Legal Shield membership, and also from Kansas, it was a couple. So I was very excited about that, and I'm going to stay in touch with these people and try to get them all started. With their memberships, because they were just very eager, and I was very happy. It just goes to show that so many different people are listening to the radio station, and so it shows you, hey, you've got a very popular show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have people who were listening in from the Swiss Alps, from Rio de Janeiro, several other places from Florida, et cetera, because of the fact that I believe in giving out information that people can use and information that we need. You know, for instance, I have trouble with my license. You know, my license was suspended because the person who was fixing my car put it out on the sidewalk from his shop, and then police gave it a ticket, and then he didn't pay it nor get it. So my license is suspended. Guess who's going to be taking care of that for me for $26 a month that I'm paying him? The legal field attorney.
That's right.
So, and I really like it, and I endorse it, you know, and that's why I'm endorsing it very heavily, because I know that other people feel the same way, you know, that you actually have an attorney at your beck and call whenever you need an attorney. And some people say, I'm not going to call an attorney because it's very expensive. You're darn right it's very expensive, you know, but the point is there is this organization, there is this company that does have this service. And I'm very satisfied with it, and I know that you two are also. Tati and Tayana, you don't need these legal services, am I right?
Yes, you are right. For us, we
have I'll tell you who would need it. I can tell you who wouldn't need it. Some of these kids who are subjected to stop and search, or stop and frisk, they need attorneys.
Exactly. And there's some kids whose identity has been stolen, and the identity thieves have bought houses or cars in these children's names, and when they reach 18, their credit is shot. because other people have stolen their identity and have used up whatever their credit might have been.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I've been actually doing a lot of research on stop and frisk. And, you know, I actually seen somebody get stopped and frisked in person.
Really?
Yeah. It was actually pretty, like, you know, just, I don't know, I was in such, like, awe that it was happening. And it was just such injustice going on, like, right
yeah.
in front of my eyes. There was so much I wanted to say, but, you know, knew I couldn't say. I probably would have gotten in trouble myself. But I've been doing research, and I know for a fact that this is illegal. And actually, I recently read an article where it was saying that it violates the Fourth Amendment. And it violates our constitutional rights about, in the Fourth Amendment, for people who don't know, is where that you can't be searched without like a probable cause, and mm-hmm. it can't, like, and most lately police have been like stopping or searching based on like instinct and stuff, and according to the Fourth Amendment, you cannot just do it based off of instinct. It has to be like a amount of proof.
You see, in that case, you know, these kids would need to have legal access at their fingertips. Okay,
right.
And I think that we can provide that for them. Sandy, what is the number that they can call, that people can call to get more information about Legal Shield? Because I really want to do this because the fact that if we can help people, and I think we can, and I know we can because I've been helped and a whole lot of other people have been helped. So what is the number that can call?
Okay.
It's the 800 number.
It's 1-877-548-4611.
Okay, can you give that again?
Sure. 1-877-548-4611.
Okay. And everybody, when you call that number, and you'll talk to Sandy, Sandra Ravis, and Alita, we'll be all, you know, we're just going to give out this one number, you know, and we can respond. And I will also respond to you if you, in case you need any extra information about this. I've been through it. I know it, and I'm very familiar with it, and I like it. So, Tati and Tatiana, this is some important stuff for you as teenagers, you know, to just be aware of. And also, you can probably tell your friends about it. I'm going to do this because there's so much, there's so many things that are still unjust. I'm not saying that, you know, that stop and frisk is unjust. At times, it darn sure is unjust, though. I'm not saying all the time that is, because we all know about, you know, people shooting and, you know, having those problems, you know, in a different community. My answer to the problem is take away the guns, period.
Right.
Okay,
can I read you a fact? Can I say a fact, a couple facts really quick?
Go right ahead. Yes.
So 9 out of 10 of the stop and frisk that happen are people are innocent. And nothing is found on them. And most of the people who are getting stopped and frisked are minorities. And and the people, the rate of the people, amount of people who have been stopped and frisked has increased by, it's like 65,000, I believe, 6,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's double the population, our own population, that has been stopped at frisk, and most of the time we have been found innocent.
If these kids belong to or joined Legal Shield, what could they say to that police person that is stopping and frisking them?
Okay. Can I say something?
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
This is Alita. As a matter of fact, we had these cases. They came out, I guess, early 2000s, when the guy was shot in his home. There were a lot of instances where minorities were stopped, not just frisked, but they were killed. Legal Shield came out with a special program. It was actually called Legal Shield. It's a 24/7 emergency number. You have a special card that you carry with you on one side. It has a little statement you read to the police. If I'm stopped, you're not allowed to search me. If I can find mine. It gives you a 800 number that you can call an attorney, and if you're being stopped for some unlawful reason just because you've been targeted, you call this number, and you will get an attorney on the line to assist you with that problem. Just having this card alone discourages overzealous police, shall we say. You say this on the side, on the back of the card, it says, if it is your intention to question or detain or arrest me, please allow me to call an attorney immediately. And you call this number. Just going
I've seen that card before. Alita, can you tell us what that card says again, because I don't have it in front of me right now.
On the back it says, hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. You say to the law officers and or security personnel, if it is your intention to question, detain, or arrest me, please allow me to call an attorney immediately. Because you want to reach in your pocket or pocketbook or pocket and pull out something. We know how bad things can happen because of that. So you ask for permission. The legal show said many law enforcement officers are conscientious and devoted to protecting your rights. But if you are stopped or detained by a law officer, we suggest you take the following measures. Give the officer your name, address, social security number, and destination. Be cooperative. But I'm saying you read that on the back to the officer, and that oftentimes will discourage police officers from going overboard. Becoming an innocent victim.
Okay. Now,
this is
also
one of the special areas of coverage that they offer.
Okay, now listen, everyone. Now you're listening to this now, and we want to help. And this does work. So the number for you to call is that 800 number that Sandy gave out, and Alita is here, and there's her number also, which we're going to be giving that out next week. And every single week, so we can get some redress because of all the stuff going on in different parts of the country. And I think because of this presidential election being so nasty, we're going to be seeing more of this, especially regarding voter repression, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to have some measure of protection when somebody, you know, stops you. And by, you know, just because they're being nasty, they want to stop and frisk or something like that. And sometimes they're not just being nasty. And sometimes people say, well, maybe it's a good idea, especially if somebody's shooting up a playground now.
Right.
You know, but the point is you want to be treated with respect. So therefore, call this information, the number that I'm going to give you right now, and then you will be able to, you know, have, you know, some information at your fingertips. Now, you will have this card, so call this number, 877-548-4611. Let me give that again. Get your pens and papers out. 1-877-548-4611. Once again, the number is 877-548-4611.
Okay, I want to say that we have 2 minutes left, so you might want to start wrapping up. Yeah.
We're running out of time very quickly. Go right ahead.
All right. Well,
hello?
Hello?
Go ahead.
All right.
Well,
thank you for having us on the show.
And thank you both. And when I come in next week, you know, we're going to be talking about you coming again, then we can really play a... You know, you'll be co-hosting again. How's that?
Sounds really good. Sounds like a plan.
Okay,
we
didn't do it today because the rain was such that we just couldn't get there. You know,
it was a mess.
I know.
Yeah, it was awful. So thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Alita. Thank you, Tatiana.
Okay.
Thank you, Tatiana. And thanks to Shauna and Ayana. Ayana's coming up next. Fantastic, Joe. Thank you so much. Thanks, Ty. And we will talk to you again. I'm Kay Thompson, and this has been a Kay and Gus Show. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.